Karma Yoga of Swami Vivekananda. The first chapter of the Karma Yoga, Swami Vivekananda says, happiness or pleasure is not the goal of life. It is knowledge. This is a very interesting concept which we will come very shortly. Where is this knowledge? All knowledge is within ourselves. This is a peculiarly Vedantic theory. We are all divine. All knowledge is within ourselves. Whatever we do only helps us either to bring out this knowledge or to cover up this knowledge. When we say a person is doing something wrong, through his actions he is covering up his inherent divinity knowledge. And when we say a person is doing good actions, that means he is trying to bring out his knowledge from within. There are any number of stories illustrating this fact that all knowledge is within ourselves. But we also have to clarify what is the meaning of knowledge, what is the meaning of consciousness. Swamiji then goes on to tell, if all knowledge is within us, how do we bring it out? Every action that we perform goes to make a person's character, our character. Character leads to will, and will ultimately unfolds knowledge. So here is the first proposition. All knowledge is within ourselves, and if we have to bring it out, we have to become persons of character. And character leads to the formation of will, and will ultimately unfolds the knowledge within us. Before I go further, let me take a story which Swami Vivekananda has said, not in this context but in some other context, which is very appropriate here. This is a Upanishadic story, but Swamiji had uniquely put it in his own way. There was a certain yogi who used to practice meditation in a lonely part of the forest on the banks of a river. Nearby, there was a poor cowherd, a very ignorant man, who used to tend his herd in that forest. Every day he used to see the same yogi meditating by the hour, practicing austerities, living alone and studying. Somehow the cowherd got curious as to what the yogi did. So he came to the yogi and said, "Sir, can you teach me the way to God?" This yogi was a very learned, great man, and he replied, "How will you understand God, you common cowherd, blockhead? Go home and tend your cows and don't bother your head with such things as God and all that." It's a big story, I'll make it short. But the cowherd became a very sincere man. He wouldn't give up. So he again and again he goes to the yogi, "Sir, teach me about God." So the yogi had no option, just he wanted to get rid of him. So one day he told him, "God is just like the big bull in your head. That is just God. God has become that big bull. So go and tend to your bull and you will reach God." So the man believed him and went back to his herd. Day and night he took the bull for God and began to worship it. He brought the greenest grass for that bull, rested close to it and gave it light, sat near it and followed it. Thus days and months and years passed. His whole soul was there, as it were, in that bull. One day he heard a voice, as it were, coming out of the bull. "What? The bull speaks," the cowherd thought. My son, come here." "Why? The bull is speaking." Of course, no, I must be wrong. The bull cannot speak. Again the voice came, and that time he found it out. He found it out that the voice was from his own heart. He found that God was in him. Then he learned the wonderful truth of the teacher of all teachers. I am with thee all the time. And he goes back to the yogi, and he approached the yogi, and the yogi saw the boy's, the cowherd's face was shining like an aura of Brahman. Then he asked him, "Who taught you about God?" "Sir, it was you who taught me about God." The yogi said, "But that was, what I said was in a joke. But I took it seriously. I went and then thought, really you were speaking the truth. And I sat near the bull. I worshipped it. And I had all this knowledge." This is the most marvelous story. And Swamiji says, all these external teachers, scriptures, and what we call in Vedanta, pratikas, images, idols, icons, symbols, and worship of all these things have only one aim. They are suggestions to light up the fire which is already within us. As it were, chipping away at the ignorance, chip by chip, block by block. So, what Swami Vivekananda was telling us, every action that we do, as it were, either it covers up our knowledge within us, or it brings it out. The next point Swamiji goes on. So the goal of life is to bring out all the knowledge. But as I said, we have to understand what is the meaning of knowledge. Because many times we say, here is a man who has great amount of knowledge. Here is a man who knows many things, a living encyclopedia, moving encyclopedia. But Sri Ramakrishna used to teach highest truths through parables. One day, such a living encyclopedia was crossing a river by a boat, and the man found everybody else, they were ignorant. So he started asking, "Have you studied Vedanta?" And all of the people in the boat said, "What animal is that, sir? We never heard about it. Have you studied this Patanjali?" "Oh, Patanjali? What Patanjali mean? We never heard about him." So he went on asking, and every time they say no, he was telling, "One-fourth of your life is gone. You never heard Vedanta? One-fourth of your life is wasted. Never heard about Patanjali? Half of your life is wasted. Never studied Kalidasa? Three-fourths of your life is wasted." And he was about to ask them more. Meanwhile, a big storm arose. At the boat, there was no question of saving the boat. So the boatman slowly asked, "Sir, do you know how to swim?" He said, "No. The whole of your life is gone." Sri Ramakrishna used to tell to teachers that he is not a man of knowledge. He has information. Information is not the same as knowledge. So that point I will come very shortly. Swamiji is telling every action that we perform, it leads to formation of character. Now, when we say, here is a man of character, usually what we mean by it is, he has some good qualities. He says, good man, unselfish man, truthful man, disciplined man. Some good qualities are manifested in him. This is not what Swamiji meant by character here. What he meant is the way we think, we act, we react. So, bad people also have character in this sense. Good people also have character in this sense. Everything that we do, what it does, it becomes a habit with us. Let me give you one or two illustrations. Supposing there is a person there is a boy who is indulged too much. The parents, you know, only son of the parents, and they are rich people. So they indulge him in his whims, fancies. Nobody ever says no to him. There was a story, you know. There was a boy who was such a boy, who was indulged by his parents. And he would not take no for an answer from anybody. So one day, he saw a shiny tricycle, from the neighboring boy. He simply went there, pushed out the boy who was riding it, and he started riding it. Naturally, the other boy was very unhappy, went on crying. So his parents came and said, "My child, you play for a short time, but give it to our son." No, he would not give. And the boy's own parents came, and he would not budge from there. Then they brought big psychologists, and they were not able to correct him. And they called the biggest psychiatrist. And of course, he takes a lot of money, you know. So he came to this fellow boy. He said, "Don't worry, in 2 minutes, I am going to get him off the tricycle." So they were all wondering, and yeah, so many people had failed, how is he going to succeed? So he went to the boy and whispered something. And then immediately the boy jumped off the tricycle and ran back to his house and started clinging to his mother. Everybody was surprised. So they asked later on, the psychologist, "How did you achieve this miracle?" He said, "Simply the man went there and said, 'Look here, boy, I am not your parents. This minute, if you don't get off the tricycle, I am going to thrash you black and blue.'" So many times, you know, if such a boy who has been indulged, when he grows up, if he doesn't get what he wants, he flies into a temper. You know, many times we see that. Is it so easy for us to tell him that don't fly into temper? This is not a good behavior. Do you think he will listen to us? Because he has been habituated to that kind of reaction. God knows how much we are habituated to our ways of thinking. All the time being ignorant that how others are looking at us, how they are judging us. We think other people are intolerable, and we do not know how intolerable we are to other people. Imitation of Christ, he says, you know, everybody complains against the other person. But we do not know what the other persons are complaining against us. So, character means how we take things. Another example would be, many of us are very, very sensitive. Especially these days, the more education we have, the more so-called civilized we are, the more sensitive we become. We can't tolerate one harsh word. We take it everything as an insult. So, we do not know how much pain we are causing to other people by our insensitivity. When we behave in a particular way, that is absolutely perfect behavior. When others, then they are uncivilized brutes. This is how we always judge people. Finding fault with others. Holy Mother used to say, "Do not find fault with others." She is not simply to many times we don't say out to people the faults that we find in others, but we mean it. Our facial expression show it, and many other, the way we act, it shows it. It's a very common thing. So this character means whatever actions we are doing, we are trying to make it a habit. Without thinking too much, we try to react. Now, if what we are doing is not good actions, definitely the character we are developing is a bad character, bad reaction. What happens when we develop a bad character? The willpower will not manifest. Now, what is willpower? Is a very interesting concept. One idea is that suppose you have decided to achieve something. Then day and night you sit there and work very hard. Of course your body says, "No, I want rest." and your mind says, I want some relaxation, I want some watch a movie or go and chit chat with friends, but your ambition, desire says, no, I am determined, I have to achieve this one. I am not going to allow you to go anywhere until you achieve what you want to achieve. Usually, this is the meaning of will that we always attribute. But in Vedanta, will is the expression of our soul, our divinity. What does our divinity want? It wants to manifest. What does our ordinary mind wants? Ordinary mind wants to suppress our divinity, to wallow, as it were, in the whirlpool, mud pool, puddle of this world, samsara. How powerful is this samsara? Sri Ramakrishna tells a beautiful story. Once there was a fight between gods and the demons. Of course, the demons, they have defeated the gods. And then the gods went and, as usual, they went and prayed to Lord Narayana. And at that time he had to take the form of a pig, female pig. I don't understand why he should, pig and female pig. Anyway, he helped the devas, established so-called dharma, and being a female pig, very soon got into, into an affair, illegal or illegal, I don't know, with another male pig. And had lot of, baby pigs, and he was perfectly happy. So the poor gods were waiting. This man had accomplished his mission, but he is not returning to Vaikuntha. What is the matter with him? They came down and found the Lord was extremely happy in the form of the pig with his little ones. So they asked him, Lord, you have finished your work. Why don't you come? You know what I am talking about? It's called Varaha Avatara. So Sri Ramakrishna put it in a funny way. He doesn't want to go back. He said, I'm quite happy. No, you have to come back. So he started cuddling his baby pigs even more intimately, afraid that he would go. Now the devas were puzzled what to do with this man. So they went to Lord Shiva. And he came with his trident, pierced the body of the pig, and the Lord went out laughing. This is the story. How powerful is this Maya? So when we are saying that we have to develop willpower, there are two sorts of willpowers. One will is the expression of the divinity self, that I want to manifest myself. The light has to come out. The other type of will is another form of intense desire. If a person is possessed of an intense desire, I want to be rich, I want to get this power or position, then you see, he will override everybody and then he will achieve. That is not willpower actually. That is going against his own nature. He is going deep into the mire of this transmigratory existence. Our mythologies are full of stories illustrating this fact. I will give you one illustration just to make the point clear. You heard about Ravanasura. Ravanasura was a demon and he wanted power. What did he do? He went and performed a tremendous amount of austerity. And what is austerity? Nothing but development of the willpower. He had developed so much willpower. Did it manifest his knowledge? No. On the other hand, what did he do? It only manifested his ignorance. That means his desire for worldly happiness had become too intense. That's why he came back and started troubling everybody, including God, who gave him this boon. Ultimately, he courted destruction. So, what we have to be clear about is, when Swamiji is telling that all actions lead to formation of character, and character is a manifestation of strengthening of the will, he means that it is the progressive manifestation of the divinity within us. It is not manifestation of worldly desires. This is where our problem lies. One of the most interesting facts that I have observed in human beings is, I am talking about devotees. No, devotees are supposed to be spiritual people. They are supposed to do more prayer, more japa, more meditation, more spiritual activities. You ask them to do more spiritual activities, they very soon get bored. One instance is right here. How many of you are listening to my talk without getting dozing inside? But supposing here is a nice cricket match or some, you know, musical concert going on, disco dance going on. How many people will you really sleep? Tell me, honestly. Very few people. What is the reason? The reason is very simple. You have very little willpower. You have that willpower. But this willpower is an intensification of a desire, not intensification of love for God. Not, it is not a spiritual will, in simple words. It is a worldly will. It is hiding. The moment an opportunity comes, immediately it will come out. So, every action that we do, if it can really strengthen the will, which is but a manifestation of our divine self, divine nature, then it goes to manifest more knowledge. Now I will come to the point, what is knowledge and what is consciousness? Now, many of us, we go on talking, here is a man of knowledge. That means he knows many things. That is not the meaning of knowledge. There are so many professors of philosophy. There are so many pundits who write big books. They can give good talks. In the Kathopanishad we have taken, you know, the Yama says to Nachiketa, this Atman cannot be realized by the intellect, by the learned, by learned discourses, by the study of scriptures. It can be only revealed by purifying the heart, purifying the intellect. So what is the consciousness? Consciousness means it is our nature. Whereas knowledge is an information which resides in the intellect. Let me give you some illustration to make this point clear. First of all, there is another word which I want to make clear. Habit. You know what is habit? Habit is called second nature. What is second nature? We react to certain habits. Because of habits, we react in a particular way. I have given you one illustration many times, but I will give you once more. Supposing you want to get up early in the morning and you buy an alarm clock and you set it at 5 o'clock in the morning and you get up. And this you have been doing for 50 years. And every day you are getting up and you are doing whatever you want to do, meditation, study, whatever. 50 years. After 50 years, say one day, the alarm clock has broken down. And next day you get up at 7 o'clock. Can you say that you acquired the habit of getting up at 5 o'clock? No, it has not become a habit. Because if you really have had the habit of getting up at 5 o'clock, you, even if there were to be no alarm clock, you will not be able to sleep. It is not that you get up with difficulty. It is impossible for you to sleep. I give this illustration, you know. Most of us have this habit of going to sleep late. At say, most of you go to sleep at about 11, 10:30, 11, is it not? Supposing you have to catch a plane next morning at 4 o'clock. You have to go there 3 hours earlier. So you have to get up at 12 o'clock. So you have packed previous evening everything. And you have nothing more to do. You are all set to travel. You say, there is a lot of time. Let me go to sleep, to bed at 8 o'clock and get a few hours of rest. Will you be able to sleep? You will not be able to sleep. And particularly that day you will not be able to sleep. Because always you are thinking, I have to get up like that. How difficult it is to break the habits. Habit is second nature. Consciousness, the word consciousness, is intimately connected with this habit. What is it? Consciously, if we go on developing a particular habit, And once it becomes a habit, it becomes our second nature as it were. And we act and react without thinking twice. That is called consciousness. That is true knowledge. See, suppose if you say that God alone is real, everything is unreal. You go on saying it a billion times. Does it produce the slightest reaction in you? You are saying, you know, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, Brahman alone is true. And somebody comes and says, you are a fool. Immediately, you know, I will take up my umbrella to give him a beating. Where is the knowledge? It is only information. It has not become your part of your consciousness. Just as you used to get angry at the slightest slight that you think others have given to you by habit, if you can also react in a spiritual way to spiritual knowledge, then you can say you have acquired consciousness. The purpose of life is to learn our lesson, how to develop this character whereby we uncover, manifest the potential divinity. That is the real character. What happens? This character, it sets the body mind into a beautiful instruments. Then what happens? Automatically, the light of the soul will manifest by itself. This happens not only in spiritual life. In Vedanta, we do not make the slightest distinction between secular knowledge and spiritual knowledge. All knowledge is coming from the one source. That is why in Hindus, you know, supposing they see a piece of paper, they won't put their foot on it. You know, this is Hindus' way of looking at things, because all knowledge is sacred, whether it is secular knowledge or spiritual knowledge. Now, supposing a Hindu sees a Quran, a book, suppose his foot touches by mistake the Quran, you know what he does? Immediately he will touch the book and touch his forehead with it. He is not paying respect to Quran. He is paying respect any type of knowledge. This is a book. He doesn't know, of course. Now, if it is written in Urdu, how does he know whether it is Quran or a Salman Rushdie's novel? He doesn't know. But he has respect. So this is through habit. We have developed that kind of reaction all the time. One day I saw here, you know, somebody had bought the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. Perhaps that person wanted to go and meditate here. After buying it, you know, where we leave the shoes, so he put the Gospel there and put his shoes on the Gospel of Ramakrishna. Because he said, you know, that is an indication, this book belongs to me, please do not take it away. But of course the person did not mean disrespect. He was not brought up in that tradition. Otherwise, why should the person buy if he wants to throw it away? No. So this is how all knowledge is within us. Person wants to be a scientist, then you do the right thinking, give deep concentration, and then the knowledge will come out. You know, so many scientific truths have come out not by thinking too much about it, by allowing the intuition to work, the greatest scientific truths. Even some of the novelists, I remember G.K. Chesterton, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the whole story came one night to him, verbatim as they say, including the commas. He said, next day, all that I have to do is take up a pen and a piece of paper, and it just wrote itself. Interestingly, many of the works that are ascribed to Aurobindo, they are the result of what he called automatic writing. By that he meant, he did not sit and think and started writing. He would just go into a peculiar state and then his hand just moves. Sometimes fools also to play what is called planchet like that, as though it is a divine something. Anyway, the point is that willpower means that which manifests our divinity, that which helps us to draw near to God, that alone is worthy of being called willpower. Otherwise, you know, so many times we see the willpower of devotees of God is far less than the willpower of so-called intensely worldly people. And sometimes they may get disturbed and say, being a devotee, why should I have such a low willpower? No, it is not that. The soul, in the mind, there is an eternal conflict. The soul wants to manifest. But the what Buddha used to call Mara, what Christ used to call Satan, what Hindus call Maya, it somehow pulls us back. Life is an eternal struggle to manifest the potential divinity of our nature by overcoming this will of this Mara or the world or Maya. Once the Maharaja of Khetri had asked Swamiji a question, what is life? And Swamiji had given a most marvelous reply. Life is the manifestation of the potential divinity by overcoming the obstacles nature throws at us. There is something within which wants to come out. Nature wants to cover it up, but the something within doesn't want to keep quiet. Life is basically a struggle to manifest. This is a wonderful idea. We all want to live. We want to acquire knowledge. We want to be happy. This is the goal of life. That is why Swamiji said, consciousness is the goal of life. Not by knowledge. He did not mean this scholarship or information. He meant the manifestation of consciousness. What is this consciousness? Sat, Chit, Ananda. It is existence, knowledge, bliss. Now here is the connection. Many times I told you that happiness is the goal of life. And what I meant by that was, we are by nature of the nature of bliss. But this life covers it up. Therefore we are struggling how to be happy all the time. Why do you want to be alive? Because you want to be happy. And what is this happiness? It is a form of knowledge. What is the knowledge? I am happy. Last week also I gave the illustration. What we think, that's what we are. You think you are happy, you are happy. Even if you are under most difficult circumstances. If you think you are unhappy, you are unhappy under the most wonderful circumstances. You may be a rich person, you may be having a most beautiful spouse and beautiful children and beautiful house. But if you are miserable, how many depressed people are there in this world who are having these marvelous things? Or from outside people think they are very happy. From inside if you go, they are depressed. This is the condition. This is the story of, you know, the king who wanted to be happy. You remember that story? There was a king. He was young, he was beautiful, had a beautiful wife, nice children, and very powerful, but he was perfectly unhappy. So he called his ministers and told, find out how I can be happy, otherwise I will chop off your heads. So they put their heads together and came up with an idea. O king, you must find out the happiest man and put on his clothes. Then you will be also happy. Immediately the king sent an army and they scoured the whole practically, you know, earth, four corners of the earth, and after 6 months returned and the king asked, did you find out the happiest man on earth? They said, yes. Have you brought his clothes? They said, no. Why not? He had no clothes. Wonderful stories, you know. So let us come back to our subject. Everything that we do has only one goal. What is that? Manifestation of knowledge. Knowledge here means manifestation of our divinity. How can that divinity be manifested? By developing character. Character means certain qualities which will automatically remove the obstacles towards manifestation of this divinity. For example, if you get up early in the morning, not sleep until 8:30 in the morning, you have ample time to sit and pray to God. And if you don't get angry, your blood pressure will not rise. You will live for a long time. If you eat a little less, then you will live for a long time. You will not suffer from cholesterol. We Hindus have a peculiar theory, you know. You know what is the theory? That each one of us are allotted a particular quantity of food. Until we finish that food, we will not die. So the fellow who goes on fasting and fasting and fasting will live a long time, make everybody miserable, including himself, and then ultimately he will die. So, in every way, our character has to be developed in such a way that it, instead of drowning us in ignorance, it will help us to manifest our divinity. Then what happens? We become happier people, healthier people, our minds will be full of energy and full of happiness, full of positiveness, full of rationality. But simply sitting in the easy chair will not help us. So this is the first chapter of Swami Vivekananda, karma and its effect upon character. Every action that we do, and by action we mean whatever we think, whatever we speak, and whatever we act, every action. There is a wonderful incident how even the slightest remark passed can affect our lives. I was at Bangalore and we had a devotee who was working as a military officer. So what happened? One day he came, this military officer came, and he was very sad. Then I asked him, why are you so sad? He told me that one of his friends was killed, shot dead by another army man. I asked, how did it happen? Then he told, you know, the person who shot him and the person who was shot, both were from the same village. And they were childhood friends. One day they were playing. And while playing, the fellow who was shot, at that time he was a little bit stronger, bigger boy, so he insulted this younger fellow. And then this younger fellow, of course, could not react. And you know, in play, we do so many things as children. And they grew up, and both of them happened to join the military. The elder fellow, I mean, who insulted the younger one, completely forgot about it. It was, after all, in a play, and as young children, it went completely out of his mind. But the other fellow never forgot that incident, kept inside him. And he got military training. You know, they also issue the guns. As soon as he got the gun, first opportunity, he went home, shot the other fellow dead, and then gave himself up to the police. Now you see, if you judge from these outside events, why did this fellow go and kill? Is there any apparent reason for him to go and shoot his other fellow? There was nothing, none. But you have to go back and say, so many years back when they were so young, even that little action had helped. The other one is a more beautiful incident. I do not know whether I am correct in interpreting it that way, but it helps us. You know, M, the chronicler of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, once he went to for some festival with his mother, and on the way back, both of them had come to visit Dakshineswar, which was on the way. So, there was a great festival that day. A large crowd was there. In that crowd, somehow, the mother lost this young boy. And the boy, he was later on also very timid, you know, not lot of courage, nervous type of person. So he started crying. And then a young priest came to him and said, oh, my child, you have lost your mother. Come, I will take you to your mother. And it so happened, several years later, after nearly perhaps 20 years later, this man was married, he had children, one of his sons died, and his father and he had some misunderstanding, he left his home, and somehow he happened to be brought to Dakshineswar, and immediately Sri Ramakrishna had accepted him as his intimate devotee, and his whole life was transformed in that instance. So my point is, after hearing this story, was it that when M met at the age of 26 or so Sri Ramakrishna, did his story of transformation start at that age, or did it start when he was a young boy and Sri Ramakrishna told him, I will take you to your mother? Maybe, I don't know. But you know, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, I recognize you, I recognize Balaram Basu. From your past birth, you are all my intimate companions. Mother showed me long before you came here that all of you will be coming here. So, we are all struggling to manifest our divinity. If the more we manifest our divinity, you may ask, spiritual life is very difficult, what is the benefit? The benefit is that we become happier people. We lose our fear. We worry less. Our minds will be full of strength, positive thoughts, and thoughts of rationality and reason. Rationality means to see things as they are and not to misinterpret them. So that is the first chapter, the essence of the first chapter of Karma Yoga of Swami Vivekananda. I see what a marvelous chapter it is. Nobody has ever pointed out what is the connection between action and character and will and knowledge. Everybody knows all knowledge is within us. I mean, Vedanta tells us from the very beginning. But what is the connection between actions? Why should we do this particular karma yoga? Because there is something called frittering away our energies and forming a character which makes us miserable, which makes us unhappy. Not only that, it is funny that just now the thought came to me. There are some girls who suffer from a strange disease called, two diseases called, bulimia and anorexia. What is this bulimia? It's go on eating and vomiting and eating, right? What is anorexia? They want to look most beautiful. They want to become angels. You know, two friends met in a garden. One of them was sitting there very morose. So his friend asked him, not friend, they were strangers, they met. So the one who was normal, he asked the depressed one. The depressed one asked the normal one. Normal one asked the depressed one. The other way around. The depressed one asked the normal one, how is your wife? What kind of wife you have? He said, oh, she is an angel. And how is your wife? Unfortunately, she is still living. By angel, he meant she is a good person. But in this man's interpretation, angel means... So, you see this, why these persons do not want to eat food or then become like that? It's the simple reason, they have an understanding that by this action, we are going to look more beautiful in the eyes of the other people. Not recognizing that it is a disease, and slowly they are committing suicide by their actions. If only they had that kind of positive thought, rationality and knowledge. Now, I'm not saying that one should become fat and obese. I'm saying there is a healthy state of body and mind is there. To develop good thoughts, strong thoughts, rational thoughts, happy thoughts, positive thoughts, looking at everything in a positive and good light, that is to be developed. It doesn't just fall from the sky. One has to go on acting consciously, with awareness, whatever we are doing. Slowly, that habit develops. And one day, this repetition of these actions will become part of our character. Then, this body and mind become most wonderful instruments. That is why in the yoga system, you know, the 8 steps. What are the first 2 steps? Yama and Niyama. Yama means get rid of all the wrong habits of body and mind. Niyama means acquire those qualities which will make this body mind a good instrument. But for what? What is the instrument for? To manifest the divinity within us. So that is why Swami Vivekananda, do you want to be a karma yogi? Then you will have to start from the beginning. You have to be very clear. Do not depend upon anybody outside. When you are praying to God, you are only praying to your own self. This action of prayer is something which brings out your own divine self from within yourself. But until we bring it out, we have to believe something. A person who believes in a stone and that stone can do magic is far better than a person who is skeptical and who disbelieves everything. So that is the first chapter. Then now comes, when we open our eyes and look out, we see infinite variety, infinite difference. Why is there so much of difference between one person and another person? One animal and another animal, one plant and another plant. What is it that makes the difference? And Swami Vivekananda starts his second chapter. The title of the second chapter is, each is great in his own place. That means he is axing the very root of what we call complex. In psychological terms, call it inferiority complex and superiority complex. All of us suffer from it. You think you are superior people, you are devotees, you don't have any complexes. We all suffer from these complexes. How do you know? Supposing, just a small example, suppose you are a frightened person, cowardly person. You can't face any difficult situation. You can't face a strong person. Suppose a small baby walks into the room. Then you grow 2 inches tall. I am superior to this child. Because you know instinctively this child is unable to do any harm to you. But the moment you sense anybody is doing any harm, immediately you feel. Always we are comparing ourselves with other people. This is foolishness. We must put a stop to it. Why? Because all of us are potentially divine. And all of us, through our actions, have brought about these differences. This is the superiority of the karma yoga. No, there are 4 yogas. Bhakti yoga, Raja yoga, Jnana yoga, and Karma yoga. What is the speciality of the Karma yoga, do you know? Jnana yoga means you believe in Brahman, an entity called Brahman. Bhakti yoga means you believe in a personality called God. And Raja yoga also believes in the supremacy of the soul. Whereas in this Karma yoga, you do not need to have any belief. You just do what is right, what is appropriate. Everything will take place by itself. Forget about manifesting your divinity and reaching God and manifesting knowledge and all those things. You want to be happy. That is the goal of everybody. You will be happy. But actions. I am not talking this by myself. This is the main philosophy of Lord Buddha. He never talked about God, but he talked about one thing, always talked about the law of karma. So, the point here is, Swami Vivekananda says, a child is great in his own place. A Swami is great in his own place. A householder is great in his own place. Never compare. You see, if you don't compare yourself, of course, some comparison is good so that we can derive inspiration. I am not talking about that. But if it is leading to complexes, if you say you are superior, definitely you feel inferior to somebody else. If you say I am inferior, definitely you feel superior to somebody else, because both of them go side by side. And they are only waste of time. I told you a story, about one man. suffering from inferiority complex, went to a psychiatrist, and psychiatrist treated him for 2 years and then called him and said that I am terminating my treatment of you. The man ghabara gaya, frightened. But doctor, I have not been cured of inferiority complex. The doctor said, no, it took me 2 years to recognize you are not suffering from inferiority complex. You are inferior. You know, a complex can be removed, but your nature cannot be removed. So all of us suffer, and then how much of pain we cause to ourselves, how much obstacles we put to ourselves. You know, that devotee is better devotee than me, that man is more wealthier than me, that person is... Why these comparisons? What will it achieve? He got his whatever he is by his actions. Do you want to become better? Then start doing right actions. So what is it? What is the cause of these differentiations? Vedanta has a explanation for it. What is the explanation? This whole of nature is the creation of the combination of three gunas. There is no equivalent translation in English for guna. We call it sattva, rajas and tamas. And each one of us have got one particular thing dominating in our lives at different times. For example, when we are early morning, when we get up, and at dusk time, when we return from office works and sit quietly, our mind is in a state of sattva, calm, contemplative, peaceful, positive. Now, if you want to find out in what mood you are, this is the test. If you are feeling very alert, but peaceful, positive, calm, contemplative, concentrative, then you are in the state of sattva. And then there is another state called rajas, means intense energy, wants to manifest. It is like, you know, I compare this, when you sit in the aeroplane just before it starts, you know, the whole plane is, you know, the man has put on all the engines, it is ready, you know, immense power. That is the peak of rajas. But how do you know? It is not merely rajas. It brings restlessness. The mind becomes scattered. It becomes incapable of focusing upon something. The man is very restless. So not only you are alert, not only you are with full of energy, but you are also, unfortunately, very, very restless. If you are in that state, know that rajas is ruling you. But there is another state. Even if Sri Ramakrishna comes and stands in front of you, he says, now I am tired, please disappear from here, I want to sleep. That is, you don't feel like doing anything. This is called state of tamas, dull. It's nothing goes inside. Even if you are so called alert, not much is going. Every day, all of us go through these three states. So it is very natural, and there is nothing wrong in it, because there is a time to be sleeping, there is a time to be active, there is a time to be calm and contemplative. But that doesn't end there. Unfortunately, in some people, some of these qualities become life dominant. Means most of the time, those qualities dominate. Even physiologically, there are certain types of bodily dysfunctions that create this kind of... For example, if somebody's thyroid gland is producing less amount of iodine, thyroxine, what is it called? Hypothyroid condition, the person becomes energyless. Not that they are in the mind, they are tamasic, but their physiological condition makes them. Some people, they produce what is called hyperthyroid. Have you ever heard about hyperactive children? Very troublesome. So it is maybe we attribute, you know, that person is, mind is very restless. It may not be, mind may not be restless. It may be that his body is overproducing this thyroxine. We do not know. That may be one of the contributing causes for that. So in each one of us, one particular quality predominates most of the time. That is what makes the difference between one human being and other human being. Now this brings a question. If we are born with this kind of, you know, malfunctioning of the glands, or what can we do? No. But who is the cause of this malfunctioning? So in your past life, you had become very lazy, so that laziness has produced lazy samskara impression. That impression had you deliberately produced this hypothyroid condition by your past actions. Some people are very energetic, ambitious, and they produce that rajasic condition, hyperthyroid. And a few people, they have been doing spiritual practice for a long time, and they produce this quality called sattva. They don't care. Even among animals, we can see the difference. See, Ramakrishna used to tell, you know, among, there are farmers who want to buy bullocks. So how do? They go to the market, and the bullocks are lying for sale, you know. So they touch the tail. I don't know how far it is true. But if you touch some bullock's tail, simply they go on chewing the cud. Nothing happens. You go on touching again and again, nothing happens. The farmers understand this is a useless bullock. It's not even worth 1 rupee. But there are bullocks. You touch the tail, immediately they will jump up and want to gore you. They say, this is the bullock I want to buy. So even they pay to the extent of 70 times more price than the lazy bullocks. So among animals also you can see, some animals are very placid. There is one animal, what is it called? Sloth. Is it sloth? It you know, it moves a few inches per hour. But that is its way of life. It is a perfect illustration of tamas. Whereas, you know, this is, recently there was a nature video. This, what owl is it? An owl is returning to UK. I forgot, you know. It is so ferocious, even small baby goats, lambs, it will simply lift and then take it away. It's owl. So powerful, you know, its eyes are like that. So much difference even among animals. Every animal, but same species of animal, some dogs very placid, some dogs are very ferocious. What is the difference? It is this quality called sattva, rajas and tamas. Now Swamiji starts his Karma Yoga second chapter and says that, you see, all of us are dominated by one particular kind of guna, and Karma Yoga has a lot to deal with how to understand what guna is dominating us, and how to make it a better guna, how to control it, how to improve it from tamas to rajas, rajas to sattva, so that we can progress in life. Progress in life is always, you know, from the lower quality to the higher quality. Here, no need to compete with each other, because all of us have got, as it were, a royal road in front of us. Nobody else is coming and blocking our way. We are only blocking ourselves. That is why there is no need to compete, no need to feel inferior or superior, no need to be envious or jealous of other people. You do the right actions, you achieve, you become a blessing to other people, and you also help other people. This is a most wonderful chapter, and it helps us in our day-to-day practical life in so many ways. We will discuss it in our next class, which would be on the 18th. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.